Hey, Hoops fans, it's Monday, January 10th. Adam Azer here with Greg Urbano. This is the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. We got a lot to talk about today. Greg, we'll give our power rankings, of course. We are selecting our All-Star teams, 12 players from the East, 12 players from the West, so we will get that debate going later. But right now, time for the starting five. We've got Ken Berger, our NBA columnist, on the phone right now. Ken, we welcome you on the show. Five questions to start the show, and it's going to be all about Melo, or at least mostly about Melo. Tell us what you're hearing right now, and will Carmelo Anthony be traded this week?
Well, I think certainly the momentum has built up to the point where, you know, it is heading in that direction at a very rapid pace on some fronts. However, the Nuggets kind of feel like they've been dragged into this breakneck pace against their will. They kind of feel like there was no impetus for them to be in any hurry over the weekend to agree to anything, and then these leaks started coming out, and you know, the fact that the Pistons were involved and that Chauncey Billups was also going to New Jersey was involved, that raised some concerns in Denver because they know that the fans will understand that means they're basically packing it in this season if they're trading their, you know, hometown point guard. So yes, there's a lot of momentum. There are a lot of people involved in this with a stake in this that want it done and want it done sooner than later. But ultimately, there are two parties that must sign off on this. Number one, Denver has to feel that this is the best deal that they're going to get. And as of this morning in my conversations, they are not yet convinced of that. They want to continue to try to get more, try to squeeze more out of this, another young player, some more cap savings, and explore whether or not anyone else has anything better to offer besides New Jersey. So that is frustrating everyone else who's involved, and that's where it stands.
Hey, Ken, now we've seen rumors of the proposed deal that right now it seems is in place. Now, would you say that the Nets are giving up too much?
Well, you know, I think as it's currently constructed, I think the Nets are comfortable with what they're giving up. They're getting a superstar player who's going to make their transition to Brooklyn, you know, a home run basically from a marketing and you know, standpoint. And if they get enough talent around them and can create some flexibility to be free agent players in 2012, they have a chance to sell it to Melo as, you know, you're not going to Newark to play with the aging Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton. You're going to Brooklyn with a chance to play with Dwight Howard or Chris Paul. So I think that's part of it. But, you know, and I'd be remiss not to mention this. I mentioned there were two parties that needed to sign off on this. One of them, obviously, Denver. The other one, Carmelo himself. Now, you know, his agent, Leon Rose, has been a driving force behind this whole thing. And, you know, most people and most of the GMs I've talked to who are involved in this believe that the fact that Leon Rose has brought another client, Rip Hamilton, directly into the mix here and included him in the deal, they kind of view that as basically tacit approval on Melo's part that he will sign an extension. But to this point, Carmelo has not said that. That has not come from his mouth. And that is the other domino, and the biggest domino of all, that needs to fall before this can actually happen.
Will we have a full 82-game schedule next year? I know you've been on top of all the lockout talk. What do you think?
Well, the best I can do on that one, it's a very complicated issue, as you guys know. The best answer I can give you comes from the people that I've been speaking to over the last few days who really have a finger on the pulse of this labor situation. And the belief is that the players will, at some point prior to the CBA expiring on July 1st, come to realize that they are going to have to cave on some level and give up, you know, either jobs or salary or something in order to satisfy the demands of the owners who have all the leverage in the negotiation. Now, if they do not do that, if they stick to their guns and insist on, you know, leaving the system essentially the way it is with the exceptions and the soft cap and 57% or close to it of revenue, then there's a growing belief that there will be a lockout. And if there is one, what would be the motivation for the owners to just make it a kind of a symbolic work stoppage and just get some minor tweaks and changes? If the owners are going to go through the pain and the PR hit and the lost season ticket sales and lost sponsorships and everything else that will go along with even a short lockout, then they're going to be motivated to make this thing really count and to extend it possibly for the entire season. So, you know, I know it's kind of a roundabout way of answering your question, but at this point, you know, still with plenty of time before we get to D-Day, I think that's the best way that I can put it right now.
We have two all-star questions for you, Ken. I know I'm going to be debating with Greg about this later, but starting point guard in the East, Rajon Rondo or Derrick Rose?
You know, that's a really good one. I would have to say, now, Rose's numbers statistically are off the charts in terms of where he was last year and where he is this year. He has really improved in so many ways, and he's a dynamic player and certainly an MVP candidate. But, you know, I'm partial to Rondo simply because the Celtics do not operate without him. They you know, he is so important to what they do. And he is such a menace on the defensive end. He impacts the game in so many different ways. You know, Derrick Rose does it with his scoring and to a degree with his distributing. But I think Rondo does more. He's more versatile. You know, these 17, 18, 20 assist games are just a marvel to watch. And, you know, he is playing for arguably the best team in the East, or the most complete team in the East, if you want to put them 1-2 with Miami and flip-flop them however you want. But certainly Boston, when they're healthy, is the most complete team, and I think that all goes to Rajon Rondo.
All right, Urbano wins that round. Go ahead. What's your last question?
All right, then, well, then looking out west, the shooting guard position, we know where the fans most likely will vote with Kobe coming back in the top spot of the third returns with all-star voting. But Manu Ginobili, Kobe Bryant, for you, who's the starting shooting guard out west?
Well, I mean, as good as Manu has been, he's really become, since they've kind of gone away from Tim Duncan being the staple of their offense, Manu has really stepped up as the guy, and the guy that they go to when they need a clutch basket, and there's no denying that. There's no denying the career that he's had and the impact that he's making now. But to me, you know, as long as Kobe Bryant is lacing up Nikes, he's your starting shooting guard in the All-Star game. There's no doubt about that whatsoever in my mind. He's not the player that he was. Age is catching up. His knees hurt. Everything else. But to me, I look at this similar to the reason that Tim Duncan will be an All-Star, even though statistically he doesn't deserve it. I consider body of work in all of this, and I think there's no disputing Kobe's body of work, and there's no denying him a spot in the All-Star starting lineup.
Ken, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, guys. Have fun.
All right, that's Ken Berger, our NBA columnist, and he is all over the Carmelo trade scenarios, so check his stuff out on CBSSports.com. Now, this podcast continues as we look at some of the storylines and the standings around the league. And by the way, if you're listening to our podcast, send us an email, CBSIPodcastFeedback@CBS.com. That's the letter I, CBSIPodcastFeedback@CBS.com. Let us know what you think. If you have a question, if you have a comment, we will address it on the air. And also, we encourage you to watch our videos. Some of this is turned into video segments, again, on CBSSports.com. All right, Greg. Lots to talk about. Now, we disagree about the Rose-Rondo thing, but all-star lineups are later in the show. So right now, I want to look at the league, kind of take a look at what's going on. And and Atlanta, they're fifth in the East right now, but they're only a game behind the Chicago Bulls. They're half game behind the Chicago Bulls. They're a game behind the Magic, and they're playing very well. So have we completely overlooked Atlanta?
Yes, I think we do so because their body work in the playoffs. We've seen what happens with Atlanta. We know they're one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference. Unfortunately,
one of the top five teams.
And after that, what are they going to do in the playoffs? Chances are they're going to be on the road facing one of those top four teams, the four seed most likely, and it's going to be tough for them. They are an undersized team. Obviously, they get great minutes out of Al Horford, who's played terrific basketball this year. Josh Smith has been amazing, and also Joe Johnson, you know, is a consistent, you know, basically about a 25-5 every single night he steps on the court. But for the most part, as you mentioned, this year you've seen Jamal Crawford play some good basketball, but we discount them because of what they are and what they'll be facing in the playoffs, much bigger teams with much better inside presences. And for the most part, for them to get to that second step, that next level, they need to bring in some sort of shot-blocking presence, at least I feel, for them to beat the teams like Orlando or Miami.
Well,
they're
2-1 against Orlando. They're not going to beat Miami.
No.
But I guess we just sort of assume, hey, Atlanta's Atlanta, and they're just going to get beat in the first round of the playoffs if they play. What if they play Chicago? I think they could beat Chicago.
Could be a very good matchup, obviously. We know Atlanta on the road struggles, so in Chicago it's going to be a struggle. But if they can take one game in Chicago, hold court, hold serve at home, perhaps they could get to round two.
been watching lately. Jamal Crawford's playing well, and here's a cool stat about Jamal Crawford. He shoots 40% in Hawks' losses. He shoots 47% in their wins. Yeah. He's a very important player.
He's the X factor for that team, as you know.
Yeah, they're not great, but they're playing well, and they deserve to be recognized. We always leave them out of our power rankings, but they're around that Utah, Oklahoma City, Chicago area. All right, anyway, Blake Griffin, I know that you have a total man crush on him.
I do.
Clippers record.
To admit it.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't be. Yes. Clippers record, 23 consecutive double-doubles.
Yeah. Not only that, he's putting up, I believe, 12, 2010 games here in a row. He's doing everything that we, or fans, hoped he would do from a physical standpoint with the highlight reel dunks just about every single night.
Almost 3/4 of his shots are dunks, it seems.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. And just watching his game develop throughout the year, he's become a better passer. And this is just in the brief frame that we've seen him here in the NBA season. Better at passing. He's cut down on turnovers. Rebounding is just extraordinary. You know, obviously, we've got three great rebounders right now in this league. Dwight Howard, Kevin Love, and I think Blake Griffin's going to be a dominant guy, dominant force from here on out hitting the boards. And just the physical presence he provides for that team. The ability for Baron Davis to just throw the ball up literally 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
Every single time Blake Griffin's going to come down with it. So he provides that confidence in his guards to know that, hey, we can basically just put the ball up and he will get to it.
He will make me watch the dunk contest.
He'll make me watch a Clippers game.
Yeah, good point. He will
make me watch a Clippers
game. I do find myself watching Clippers games.
As do I.
And they're a 500 ball club since that horrible start. They're a good team that they can beat good teams. So they are worth watching. Yep. All right, Phoenix. Phoenix looks done. Really bad loss on Friday night. And we were wondering how the trade would affect them when they gave away some very good players and got some good ones back, but it just hasn't worked out. Vince Carter, he's healthy now, and he's playing all right, but look, Phoenix just looks awful. They've lost 3 out of 4. They lost by 25 at home on Friday night to the Knicks, which is like insult to injury because here comes Mike D'Antoni and Amari Stoudemire, and they're just running Phoenix out of their own gym. So it doesn't look very good right now for the Suns, who are behind Portland. Well, Portland's got the 8th spot right now. Then it's Memphis. Then it's Houston. Then it's Phoenix. And Phoenix has 3.5 games to make up.
Yeah, they're dropping off. And add to that, Grant Hill now tweaked his knee, so he might be out for a short period of time. And he's really been great this season for them.
Yeah, except Alvin Gentry decided to have him guard Amari Stoudemire.
Not the smartest thing.
That game was over as soon as he penciled Grant Hill in as the 4.
That's right. And really, that trade, when they made the trade, getting rid of Jason Richardson really depleted their athleticism and really even their outside shooting. We know they have Jared Dudley still can shoot. We know they have shooters. But getting rid of Richardson, I felt, really hurt that team. And then you bring in Vince Carter, who to me is, when you trade for Vince Carter, this point in his career, you're basically saying we're done for the year.
Because I didn't think they were giving up. I thought the Gortat deal, the fact that they got Gortat would make them a better defensive
team. You
thought
so.
Yeah.
At this point, it's
obviously you're downgrading from Richardson to Carter. There's no doubt. But I didn't think that the drop-off would be this bad. And they did bounce back and they beat Cleveland, but everybody beats Cleveland. Yes. Cleveland is 8-29. So, yeah, it's just disappointing right now for
it's tough. And Steve Nash, you know, obviously feeling a lot of pressure here. It's really on his shoulders. Where do they go from here with Steve and where does he go? And really, what does he want from his career? Does he want to just finish it in Phoenix or try to go for a ring?
Another team that looks like total garbage right now is Denver. They've lost 3 in a row, and it looks like injuries and the trade really taking their toll. They've lost to some bad teams. You're talking about the Clippers, the Kings, and then recently, last night, the Hornets. So that's not a bad loss. All right, it's time for a brand new segment. We're calling it Crazy Stuff We Saw Last Week.
Really?
We're working on the title.
Yes, we'll get there.
It's a working title. But the point is, Crazy Stuff We Saw Last Week. Again, if you're listening to the podcast, you might want to get onto the website and check out the video for this, CBSSports.com, because some of this is a little bit visual. But we're talking about wardrobes, player-coach collisions.
No wardrobe malfunction.
No wardrobe.
Again,
well,
this is CBS. We're
it's
not
kind of a malfunction when you see
a little bit,
what
slightly,
we're talking
yes.
about. But let's get it started with the wardrobe malfunction or whatever you want to call it. Walt Clyde Frazier, color broadcaster for the New York Knicks.
Wow. Beautiful.
On January 4th, this was the Spurs were coming to town. It was a big game. Everyone was excited. He wore a suit that was basically cowhide.
Well, the Spurs coming from Texas. He wanted to welcome them with a nice Texas jacket.
This is hideous. He wears a lot of crazy stuff.
He
this
does.
Is the worst I've ever seen.
He does. He's one of those guys that really just likes to be eccentric in every suit that he selects.
Yeah.
And certainly this is one of them. We've seen a leopard print one from Frazier as well, but this is one of his best.
Mike Breen in this picture we were showing, he doesn't even want to look at Clyde Frazier. And I was watching the intro to that game, and he looked at Clyde. He's like, what are you
what
wearing?
What are you doing?
All right, so we saw some other ridiculous wardrobes. Let's show Michael Jordan from 1986. On the Dave Letterman show.
Wow.
What do we got here, Greg?
That's a tracksuit and a half. and that is beautiful blood red, really just shiny, shimmery. I don't know what else you can get. I feel like there's a collar underneath there.
There looks like a blue collar, yeah.
Beautiful.
And those very, very white shoes and white
socks. And, of course, the Nike shoes.
Yeah, but that wasn't so bad. We just thought that was kind of funny.
Well, you go on a show like that, you expect a nice
suit
and
exactly.
Tie. And that, you know what? Hey, David Stern, I think, you know, him saying you guys need to dress up, it's bled over to many other things as well.
But since we were talking about Clyde Frazier, we have to compare him to some other famous broadcasters who wear disgusting things. So let's cue up the video here. What do we got next? This is Craig Sager.
Sager,
this is actually one of his better suits.
Exactly.
I'm not sure if we have anything worse. But what Clyde was wearing, definitely worse than anything I've ever seen Sager in, right?
You know, Sager, he really pushes the boundaries on textures as well. So he'll come out with something maybe velour, maybe something soft. Who knows? He also pushes the boundaries with colors and textures.
And what about Don Cherry?
Don Cherry, you know, I mean, hockey guys in general, we know they're pretty
this
crazy.
This is like a red plaid.
I mean, he goes all out pretty much every single time you see him on TV. He's got something special. And I doubt he wears any of them twice. I think he's one of those guys. He wears one.
This is sharp.
Send it away.
We're looking at some really weird stuff, but this is sharp. Yeah. Whereas Walt Frazier just looked like a clown.
You're right.
A cow.
You're right. He looks well put together. Yeah. It is sharp. I would say that word as well.
All right, now here comes a quote. Let's look at a quote from last week, and it comes from Phil Jackson. This was after a Lakers loss. Two quotes here.
The first one. Quote.
Yeah, we were talking about this after we read it last week. The first one, we get behind early on in the third quarter on some stupid plays, poor passing, poor transition defense, and then Kobe has to screw up the game and start energizing the team by going one-on-one, and that takes the rest of the guys out as a consequence.
Yes. So if you just see that in print, you
believe... Kobe has to screw up the game. That's the main thing here.
Yes.
He meant what he said.
I would assume so. And like I said, if you read that in a newspaper online, certainly those are the words you pick up, screw up.
Yeah, and that's headline grabbing.
Absolutely.
So then what was his explanation?
The explanation
when it came, when it became, you know, kind of a story. He says, when a game starts getting out of hand, and rightly so, Kobe will crank it up, not screw it up. I use that term, screw it up, but not in terms of it being an error or a mistake, but crank it up. He'll go to another notch to try to get us back in the ballgame. That is a horrible explanation.
Yes, cranking, screwing. No, I don't really see how he can use those two intermittently. But at the same time, we know Phil Jackson. We know what he says things to motivate players. Kobe did not take this too well, if you remember Kobe's reaction. So a little bit of backtracking, it seems like to me, from Phil Jackson, who doesn't often backtrack off of statements. I do think this one he kind of regrets the word usage.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Then we had a moment that would make Sal Alossi, the Jets' former get-back coach, kind of proud.
Yes.
Scott Skiles, tough guy, defensive coach, will do anything to win a game, clearly, including colliding with Carlos Arroyo after Arroyo took a jump shot. Here's an image we have of that.
Yep.
Skiles looks a little scared. Look how far onto the court he is.
Great point guard. Leads. He has a record for assists in the game. However, you're not still playing. You need to stay where the coaches stay, behind the out-of-bounds line. And unfortunately for him, you see this often with coaches, but usually it's when the ball is on the other side of the court that they'll come out and they'll try to signal to their players.
He's standing on the three-point line.
Absolutely.
In this
shot. As the possession is on that side of the court the entire time.
Now, if you thought Phil Jackson's quote was weird, I have no idea what Gilbert Arenas
is
talking about 50% of the time he talks. But then... Yes. He said that he had two quotes. The first one, he said he and J.J. Redick are, quote, the two best white shooters in the league. There's a fatal flaw in that quote. He's only one of them's white.
Yeah, I thought so.
So here comes the follow-up quote, the explanation. He said, quote, in practice, I'm one of the best shooters in the world. I proclaim I'm the best shooter in the world in practice. It's just not falling in the game right now. He's talking about Redick. He's a very great game shooter. When you shoot that good, you got to be white. So he said, when you guys ask him, he's going to be the best black shooter. What is he talking about here?
You're asking me to try to explain Gilbert Arenas or try to say that he has any rational thoughts going through his brain, which I don't believe he does still. I mean, obviously we know what happened last year. You would think this year he would just be quiet, reserved, and just play his role in Orlando. That's not Gilbert. We know that's not who he is. He needs to make headlines. He needs to say things that are just weird or eccentric, and this is just one more of them. I really can't even come up with an explanation as to why he said this or where he was really going with this at all.
And the funny thing is, the best shooters in the league, they're not even white.
No, we looked at, I believe, the top 10 percentage three-point shooters. The only one was in there, and that was J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, some of the best of all time. Weird statement.
Very weird.
You don't expect anything less out of Gilbert Arenas.
That's something you joke around about in practice.
Yes,
you don't say it to the media.
No.
All right, and our last crazy thing we saw
one more
in the week of basketball comes from high school in Twin Valley South High School in West Alexandria, Ohio. The ridiculous half-court backwards shot by Austin Groff. Give us a little play-by-play.
Watch 21 on the bench here. 21 jumps up, and you're thinking this is a game winner, right? End of first quarter.
Yeah.
End of first quarter. 21 got a little bit excited.
And they lost the game,
they
too.
They did end up losing the game as well. So, great shot, unfortunately. You know, if that's at the end of the game, then you got to celebrate like that. But, yeah, like you said, terrific shot.
Yeah.
Deserves
Austin Groff, congratulations. Great
boy,
shot.
Austin.
Unfortunately, that will be the best moment of your career, but... Hey,
hater.
At least he's got a best moment of his career.
That is true. I don't have any video highlights that were shown across the web and online or on the TV as
and
well.
I've never made a shot like that. Let's move on to our power rankings. You ready?
Get to it.
All right, you can kick it off.
All right, I should kick it off.
Now, last week, I think we both had the Spurs number one, right?
We did. We
all
did. Right. And obviously, tough week for them.
Yeah, we jinxed them a little bit.
Two road losses, so we go now, and I have the Miami Heat at number one. Obviously, we know what they've done on the road as of late, and the fact of the matter is they have just become the team we thought they would be. You're still thinking 72 wins is a possibility.
Well, look, they're 30-9. So
yes.
If they go 42-1 the rest of the way, then they get to 72.
Yeah. Would be great. But as we know, they're going to experience some injury to one of the big three at some point this season.
I don't know.
Even if they do, it's not likely that they'll lose. They still, without one of those guys, are probably the best team that will be on the court that night. So I have the Miami Heat at number one. I mean, in any given night, it could be against one of these top five teams. But, you know, in the Eastern Conference, if they're missing a Wade or a LeBron or even Bosch, they're still one of the best teams on the court. For me, number two, the Orlando Magic, who now have won 9 straight. Mm-hmm. We know that they've bolstered that roster. They're now deeper. They run the floor better. And obviously, Dwight Howard just holds down everything in the paint. For me, number three is the San Antonio Spurs. Like we mentioned last week, they were at number one. 2 tough road losses last week, New York and Boston. And then 2 close 3-point wins at Indy and against Minnesota. You know, obviously not really sure. We mentioned this last week that they will hit a lull at some point in the season.
Yeah, you know, I watched those games, but the 3-point wins, both of them. They were very lucky to beat the Pacers on the road. They just had a rough week. Yep. They didn't play very well.
Defensively, they held Indy to 1 field goal in the fourth quarter in that game, which really sparked them. And Greg Popovich will take any win he can. As he said, wins are always good. There has never been a bad win. So, you know, obviously they're not going to blow out every team like the Miami Heat have been. Well, actually, recently they haven't. But for the most part, Spurs playing good basketball deserves to be there at number three. For me, the the Boston Celtics are at number four. Now, they felt the fatigue of a 5-game week this last week. They played Chicago on Saturday, the 5th game of the week. They lost 90-79, and I just felt like a little bit of fatigue wore in there. And finally, number five, the Lakers, who last week were outside of the top five. They've now crept back in. Win streak is now at 4, should be 7 by week's end. They've got a game against Cleveland, at Golden State, and then against New Jersey. That's 3 wins right there for the Lakers.
Yeah, and Bynum starting to come into form
a little bit. Rounding into
form. Yeah, absolutely. So you went Heat, Magic, Spurs, Celtics, Lakers. I have a very similar top five. I go Heat, Spurs, Magic, Boston, Lakers. So I just switched the 2 and the 3. I went with the Spurs at 2 and the Magic at 3. But, yeah, I mean, for the Heat have won 21 of 22. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
The last 2 games were in overtime, but 13 straight road wins, 3 shy of an NBA record. So the Heat are just in the zone right now. And I watched the game yesterday where LeBron James just decided to take over and kind of steal that game from Portland. The Spurs, again, they struggled this week, but still number 2 for me. Number 3, the Magic. Hedo Turkoglu playing very well for the Magic. He had a triple-double a week ago on Monday. 17 assists on Saturday. He's really distributing the ball very well. And if you look at his game log, look at the amount of assists he had with Phoenix, and then as soon as he got traded to Orlando, he's really moving the ball very well.
He's clearly comfortable in Orlando. He's allowed to play the type of game he wants to play, and you see that in his stats.
Yeah, Celtics 4. Watching Glenn Davis try to defend Carlos Boozer, it was absolutely embarrassing. So you can tell that's the kind of game that they need Kevin Garnett. And then the Lakers... 4-game winning streak, and they've won 6 out of 7. I thought about the Bulls because they had that win over the Celtics, but they lost to New Jersey and Philly on the road.
Can't do that.
Yeah, you cannot do that. All right, moving on. It's time to talk All-Stars.
Let's get to it.
All right, East. We'll start with the East. Now, I can't understand for the life of me. I'm going to look at my 5 starters and then yours. I cannot understand how you put Rajon Rondo over Derrick Rose as your starting point guard.
I do believe we just talked to Ken Berger.
I can't understand
NBA expert.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Yeah, he really hurt my case. Ken Berger agrees with
that.
You.
He did.
So I went with Rose, Wade, LeBron, Amari Stoudemire over Kevin Garnett, who leads the fan voting, and Dwight Howard as a center. Now, Dwight Howard Wade and James are no-brainers.
Yes.
And I think, to me, Amari Stoudemire is a no-brainer. You've got to put him in over Kevin Garnett, right?
Yep.
So you have those four as the same. Tell me why you went with Rondo over Derrick Rose. Was it because Derrick Rose and Rondo just played head-to-head on Saturday and Rose completely humiliated him and had a much better game and the Bulls won? Was that why?
Clearly was not.
Okay.
But for me, number one, the first thing is that he's played better for the first part of the season. In my estimation, he has been the best point guard in the league up to this point. And the second reason
is... Rondo's been the best point guard in the league?
That is what I just said.
Oh, my God.
The second thing, in an all-star game, especially when you got these four guys, what do I want on the court?
I want the best player.
I want a point guard who's going to distribute the ball. There's no one that does it better.
Like...
There's no one that does it better than Rajon Rondo. When you have four guys, when you have Wade, LeBron, Amari, and Dwight Howard, who do you want? You want a guy that's going to get somewhere in the paint that'll draw the defense to him.
When was the last time you watched an All-Star game?
To a wide open
it's
player.
Not like a normal game.
I understand.
They're
going to
score 200 points apiece.
He's still going to be the guy that distributes the ball to them. I mean, if you watch Jason Kidd in All-Star games, he just plays great because he knows get the ball to the guys who score, and he does it better than anyone. Rondo right now is the best point guard in the league,
right,
deserving to start.
You got
to
be kidding me.
On either conference.
Wow.
Yes.
I cannot believe what I'm hearing right now. Okay. So we do have four of the same five in the starting lineup. I like Rose. You like Rondo as a starting point guard. Let's go to our reserves. I'll start with mine. Kevin Garnett, Rajon Rondo, and Paul Pierce. So you have Garnett and Pierce, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll get to yours later. But Garnett, Rondo, and Pierce, I do like the Celtics there. I like Luol Deng. Now, this is a guy that's going to be a little bit controversial, but I thought filling out the rest of the East was a little bit more difficult, certainly more difficult than the West. You're not looking
absolutely
at the same stars. Andrew Bogut as my backup center. Josh Smith, good solid year, just doing what Josh Smith does. And I think Andrea Bargnani could be on the team. You can make a case for some other guys like Danny Granger. I know you're going to make that case. But
yeah.
Bargnani is the best player on that team, scoring a lot, doesn't play any defense. I know that. He's not a great player, but he's done enough offensively, and he's a threat, and you have to cover him. You have to game plan for him.
You do.
So I put him on the team. So again, Garnett, Rondo, Pierce, Deng, Bogut, Smith, Bargnani. I don't even like that team.
No, I mean, we looked at the depth in the Western Conference. You could have made two All-Star teams. And in the East,
exactly,
it was difficult enough to make one. So looking at my reserves, Derrick Rose obviously would be the top reserve backing up Rondo. Then I've got Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. So obviously the big three there in Boston deserving of making the All-Star team yet again, which is just crazy. Joe Johnson, Josh
Except
Smith.
Except a different big three this time.
That's right. That's right. So you leave Ray Allen out. To me, you know, Rajon, if you don't include him in the big three, let's call it a big four because obviously he's such a big part of that team.
All right, so I pick it up after the
Rose,
big three.
Pierce, and Garnett. And then I've got Danny Granger over Luol Deng. Danny Granger scores the ball a little bit more than Luol Deng. The both of them are very similar percentage-wise. They're very similar players as well. To me, Danny Granger just provides a little more for his team because really he's the only
he's
person.
He's really not having that good of a year, though. They're not thrilled with what he's been doing.
And he's struggled in knowing his role with this team because it's a constantly evolving team with a different roster pretty much every year around him. So he always has to switch roles. And this year it has been a bit of a difficulty to start, but to me, Danny Granger is an all-star and deserving to be an all-star.
All right.
After that, Joe Johnson and Josh Smith, the two Atlanta boys. And then I've got Andrew Bogut also there making my roster as the backup center.
So I have Deng and Bargnani. You have Johnson and Granger.
That's right.
All right. What do you think about Felton?
He's one of my outside looking in. I've got Felton, Luol Deng, Bargnani, Elton Brand, and Carlos Boozer outside looking in. Boozer's played well enough, but obviously he just hasn't been on the court long enough this season to be an all-star.
I'll kick it off with the Western Conference. And what do we have, the same or similar?
The starting five, I look at, absolutely.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I think it's the same.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, starting point guard. That was a tough one. Kobe Bryant. I thought long and hard about Kobe Bryant versus Manu Ginobili, but if you look at the numbers, as great as Ginobili's been, he hasn't been as good as Kobe Bryant. I'm waiting for the time when somebody dethrones Kobe, but no. Kobe's the starting shooting guard. Durant, obviously, at the three. Dirk Nowitzki, obviously, at the four. And then Nene is your starting center. And if you're wondering why Nene, because some of the guys that you think of as centers out west are listed on the ballot as power forwards,
sure,
like Tim Duncan, who's not an all-star, in my opinion.
No, Pau Gasol.
Pau Gasol is another guy who's a power forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would put Gasol as a starting center, but you have to go by what's on the ballot.
Exactly.
Nene is the starting center for me. Who are your starters?
Same thing. Like, as you said, at the center position, really, I didn't see any center deserving of making the all-star team. Nene makes it because they need a center at that position or a player at that position.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, Kobe, Kevin Durant, Dirk Nowitzki, as you said,
no doubt.
Should be starters, and they will be. Looking at the reserves, Carmelo Anthony, Pau Gasol, no-brainers. They're going to be there for a long time to come. Manu Ginobili's played great this year. Darren Williams, to me, has been, you know, as good as he's been throughout his entire career, but he's really, really pushing the Utah team this year. And I look at Rudy Gay out of Memphis, also had just a terrific year, the reason that Memphis might make the playoffs this year. Then I go and I look at some of the youngsters who I believe are absolutely deserving of making this team, Blake Griffin and Kevin Love. I don't think there's any way you can leave them off the All-Star roster. I don't really care who else is out there. They've done too much for the game this year. Kevin Love has really reinvented the game of rebounding, and the style that he plays is such an old-school style that he really deserves to be rewarded for that and put on this team. Then you look at Blake Griffin and you think, obviously, he is a rookie. To put a rookie on the All-Star team, he has to do something very special, and there's no doubt in my mind Blake Griffin has done that. He's become pretty much the face right now of the NBA as far as highlight reel plays are considered. I think more people are on NBA.com looking at Blake Griffin highlights than anyone else right now by far. So you want to make this a fun game for the fans as well. You want to have a player like Blake Griffin on the court during the All-Star game, no doubt.
He currently is fifth among forwards in All-Star balloting. It goes Durant, Anthony, Gasol, Tim Duncan, Blake Griffin. It's really not even close, in my opinion. Griffin's having a better year than Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan should not be an All-Star.
Not even a question of who's having a better season.
My reserves are similar to yours. I only have one difference. I have Darren Williams, Manu Ginobili, Carmelo Anthony, Pau Gasol, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love. Instead of Rudy Gay, I went with Monte Ellis.
Okay.
So let's debate Ellis versus Gay.
Yeah.
Ready?
Go ahead.
Monte Ellis is third in the NBA in scoring, 25.2 points per game. Rudy Gay, 21.2 points per game. Monte Ellis shoots 46.5%. Rudy Gay, 48.6%. So Ellis scores more points, four more per game.
Shoots more.
Shoots slightly less percentage, slightly lower percentage, yeah. 6.1 rebounds per game for Rudy Gay. 5.6 assists for Monte Ellis. So obviously you would expect them to have different to be good in different categories. 1.9 steals per game for Rudy Gay, 2.3 steals per game for Monte Ellis. Statistically, these guys are pretty similar.
Very close. Rudy Gay percentage-wise is better across the board. And the one thing I see in both of these guys, you know, obviously Monte Ellis, when you look at what an All-Star should be or when you look at what an MVP should be, do you make your teammates better? I'm not sure that I could say that on a nightly basis.
His assists are up. I think
now,
he absolutely
trust
does.
Trust me, he definitely is getting assists because he has the ball in his hand, you know, all the time. Him and Steph Curry are really playing a good job of kind of distributing both of them to their big men and getting the ball to the guys that they know can score. Jarrell Wright obviously playing a great season right now for Golden State. But what pushed me over for Rudy Gay is that he's just got that extra ability at the end of the game to take over. And we've talked about many, many times, teams need a guy who will have the ball in his hands, take that last shot and win the game. To me, yeah. Rudy Gay has done that this year and will continue to do that. So that's why, to me, he's more deserving of the All-Star spot than Monte, who's been playing great and even better than he played last year when people thought he was snubbed.
So if you're watching our videos, you can check out the entire audio portion of this show in iTunes, in Microsoft Zoom, and on our website and our CBSSports.com basketball podcast. We'll be back again next week. If you're listening to the podcast, send us an email at CBSIPodcastFeedback@CBS.com. Okay, I know a lot of the listeners are going to be hearing this after the game takes place, but Auburn, Oregon.
It's going to be what I think, obviously, a high-scoring game. Everyone knows that. Should be a very good game. Auburn, to me, 45-42, very close game.
See, I went with a little bit low scoring.
Really?
I went 35-24 Auburn.
Okay.
I think it'll be a really
good
game.
For those two teams, it's a low scoring.
Yeah, yeah. Cheap. Well, yeah, that would be half of Oregon's
what Oregon normally puts
average.
Yep.
I think cheap touchdown, not a cheap touchdown, but a late touchdown puts the game away for Auburn. Closer game than the final score, but I'll go 35-24.
All right. Should be a good game either way. I love
four
Oregon's
of our experts picked Oregon, 4 out of 5.
Wow.
On our website.
Everyone likes to pick an underdog because then you can say, I picked them.
No, they're thinking, oh, they've got the defense. They've got the defense, but their defense is overrated.
Let's see what happens. Right. Should be a good game either way.
For Greg Urbano, I'm Adam Azer. Special thanks to Ken Berger and our producer, Matt Brodsky. We'll talk to you next week.